Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Kremery. Alaska lawmakers are searching for solutions to a looming shortage of natural gas that threatens power and heating for much of the state's population. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the region's largest gas utility is warning that shortfalls could come as soon as next year, and imports are years off.
Alaska famously has tons of oil and gas. Getting it out of the ground to where it needs to be? Now that's a different story.
70% of the population live along the rail belt and depend on Cook Inlet gas.
That's Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican and the chair of the Senate Energy Committee. Throughout South Central Alaska, heaters, stoves, and notably electric power plants rely on gas. Now, lots of the state's gas is up on the North Slope, but it's more or less stuck there until or unless the state builds a pipeline south, which would take longer than the state has time to wait, says Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican.
We can't wait 10 years. So we need to move forward.
That means continuing to rely on gas from Cook Inlet. And most of that comes from Hilcorp, the Texas-based oil and gas company that dominates the Cook Inlet Basin. And though the company says it plans to keep drilling, Hilcorp Senior Vice President Luke Sauget told a joint meeting of the House and Senate Resource Committees that they're expecting production to decline.
Part of the reason we're all here is because the gas under Hilcorp's leasehold cannot meet 100% of the demand that is there is today in the Cook Inlet market. So we need other sources of energy.
Hilcorp warned utilities in 2022 that it could not keep supplying gas at existing levels. Sauget says that's because it's only allowed to write contracts based on its proven reserves of gas, and it's expecting production to fall by nearly half over the next 5 years. ANSTAR, the South Central Gas Utility, told lawmakers that most electric utilities contracts with Hilcorp expire in 2027 and 2028, and it's unclear where gas will come from once they expire.
And the more we slip on that, the worse this problem gets.
That's ANSTAR President John Sims. He says he's not confident there will be enough gas to meet demand next year. And he says gearing up to import gas from outside will take until at least 2030.
That is a scenario where everything goes absolutely correct. Where we've expedited some permitting processes, and everything flows smoothly.
Sims says smaller-scale backup plans would triple current gas prices, and even once imports are online, he estimates prices would be 60% higher than they are now. So in the short term, the focus is on boosting production in Cook Inlet. And two smaller gas producers told the committee that they're facing significant hurdles in bringing new gas online.
We know the gas is there. There's no question. It is a matter of getting the funding to develop that gas.
Benjamin Johnson is the CEO of Blue Crest Energy, and he says he's struggling to raise the $400 million it would take to access a gas deposit off the coast of the southern Kenai Peninsula. Lawmakers are considering a variety of bills that would provide incentives for drilling, including lower royalties. But would royalty relief go far enough towards increasing gas supplies from the region's overwhelmingly predominant producer? Hilcorp's Sauget says he's not sure if any of the circulating bills would do enough to push the company to drill more in the short term. Lawmakers are still exploring the best ways forward, but House Energy Committee Chair Representative Tom McKay, an Anchorage Republican, says he's confident they'll find a solution.
I think the public needs to realize that this is not a time to panic. This is not a time to get emotional. This is not a time to become irrational. We have lots of assets. We have lots of reserves. We have the capability to solve this problem in this building, and I believe we very well will do so.
More hearings on the issue are expected in the coming weeks. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And a Kenai Peninsula man who was immunocompromised died late last month from the Alaska pox virus. That's according to a state health department bulletin released Friday. He's the first known person to die from the Alaska pox virus and only the seventh reported case. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Alaska pox was discovered in the state in 2015. It's related to other orthopox viruses like smallpox, cowpox, and monkeypox. Epidemiologist Dr. Julia Rogers works for the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and is assigned to the Alaska Division of Public Health. She says the virus usually infects animals.
Orthopox viruses are zoonotic viruses, meaning that they circulate primarily within animal populations with spillover into humans occasionally.
Rogers says she expects Alaska pox infections to remain rare. And she says it's unlikely someone who is not immunocompromised would die from the virus. She says there's no evidence of person-to-person transmission. The six other people who've had confirmed Alaska Pox cases were all in the Fairbanks area. All of those infections were from contact with animals. Because there are so few cases, epidemiologists don't know exactly how people can get the virus, but Rogers says it's likely transmitted by direct contact with an infected animal. The Kenai Peninsula man who died from the virus lived alone in a forested area. He said he was feeding a stray cat who scratched him regularly and hunted small mammals. The cat was tested for Alaska pox and was negative. Rogers says Alaskans should wear gloves when retrieving small mammals from traps and wash their hands afterwards.
If you're trapping or hunting, make sure that you're trying to avoid having any of your pets interact or make contact with these small mammals.
And Rogers says anyone with lesions should visit their healthcare provider. Dr. Ben Wesley is an infectious disease specialist. He says it's important for healthcare providers to learn how to recognize Alaska pox lesions.
Pox lesions are quite unusual looking, and I think most doctors that are evaluating rash will say, geez, this is a weird rash. But if they haven't heard or aren't thinking about pox virus, they won't make the diagnosis.
He says other symptoms can include swollen lymph nodes, especially near lesions. The Alaska pox strain found in the Kenai Peninsula man is distinct from previous cases. Health department staff say that may mean the virus is more widespread than previously thought. The man who died of Alaska pox was elderly and immunocompromised due to cancer treatment. His symptoms started with a large lesion in his armpit area. Later, he developed more pox-like lesions. Wesley says infections are rare, and Alaskans should be aware of symptoms, but not worry.
We live in an amazing place with contact to a lot of different wildlife and scenery, and this is just something that comes with the territory. If there are dead animals or stranded sick animals, you should not handle them on your own. You can call wildlife experts.
The state recommends that healthcare clinicians be on the lookout for Alaska pox symptoms. Providers should report suspected cases to the Department of Health. They can find example images of Alaska pox lesions on the department's Alaska pox FAQ. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And hundreds of Kotzebue residents have been without drinking water since last Monday. The city of Kotzebue declared an emergency Thursday. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, some residents report having dark brown water coming from their pipes, while others have no running water at all.
Tessa Baldwin is the city manager for the city of Kotzebue.
Our public works team currently is working basically around the clock to fix the issue, and we are contracting out a lot of this work because it is a bigger project than what we could handle in-house right now.
Kotzebue's water runs on a loop system, and the largest of the city's five loops is clogged. After pressure was lost, the water in the city pipes froze. Baldwin says problems can compound with aging infrastructure.
When you were trying to fix a 1950s water pipe, or water loop, I should say, there's a lot of other factors that come into play.
She says public works staff now have to dig up the water loop to find and fix the clog. Baldwin says the lack of water makes a difficult situation, not only for health risks, but for emergency situations like fires. City officials have reported cracked pipes on the loop so far after finding similar damage on another loop last month. Baldwin says Kotzebue's water infrastructure is in desperate need of repair to secure the community's public health. The city has had over 24 alerts for water quality issues over the past year. Residents that do have running water are reporting it's dark brown. Baldwin says the discoloration is likely from elevated levels of manganese. She says the brown water is safe but should be boiled.
We are currently advising our residents that if you do have running water, to continue with the boil water notice. For those completely without water, please temporarily shut off your water circulation pump and electric hot water heater for a little bit and then turn it back on and then see if that works.
The Environmental Protection Agency has linked long-term exposure of high levels of manganese to a neurological disorder similar to Parkinson's disease. Infants who are bottle-fed are especially susceptible if water with high levels of manganese is mixed with formula. City officials are currently working with the Native Village of Kotzebue, the city's tribe, to deliver potable water and buckets to citizens affected by the clogged loop. City staff are also conducting a survey of households to gauge how the damaged loop is affecting them. Baldwin says there is no definitive timeline for when Kotzebue's most recent water issues will be resolved. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
This is KTOO.